Welcome back, guys, to the A-List Lowdown. Coming at you, the Outlawed Roundup, maybe, depending on which feed you're in. But it's March 19th, coming at you with Elbows Up Pokemon and Mass Integration. I mean, this Elbows Up bullshit. I mean, you guys have never looked more gay than you do right now, really. I mean,
Wait till you see the Pokemon scrap.
Pokemon scrap? I mean,
have you seen it?
No, I thought it might have something to do with the fact that, like, what's his name? The Crown Prince Salman or whatever, the dude in charge of Saudi Arabia bought Pokemon Go and all the data. So probably all of your data and your location data.
No way. Are you serious?
No, off to Saudi Arabia. Yeah, I don't have it for the show. I just is in passing.
No, it's not about that. No.
Interesting.
No, not about that. It's just a silly little meme. It's like a 2-minute video that I want to show you. It's actually just to laugh at some stuff that's happening, really.
You want to start with that?
Because I got lots of serious stuff too, but yeah, let's start with that. I mean, so the Elbows Up thing, right? Like, I'm going to show you something else from the food processor about the Elbows Up crowd, is that what it is? Oh yeah, the professor. Did I say processor?
Yeah.
Probably read it as
food processor, buddy.
Yeah, where did it go? So, here it is. So I just thought this was kind of funny. Elbows Up, right? Have you seen this fight? So I'm going to, we started too
fast. It's working.
Tested. It can't be working. Is it the volume's working too? Okay. Let me see. Is it working now?
Yeah, but it's working.
Okay. I'm going to turn it down a bit. So this is a scrap going on with about 20 guys at, like, near the Bullards at a parking lot.
Grown men, even.
Girl, fucking hold me back right now.
Hold me back.
Watch this. They start swinging. Watch this guy comes in with a flying jump kick, and then he runs away. Watch, and then he runs away. Look. This is a big.
This is the gayest fight ever. What is going on? Just a bunch of, like, non-committal blows. Flailing.
And then this dude just walks through this old guy walks here. Look at him. Just a guy walking into, guess where he's going? Into Costco in Brantford. A bunch of people fighting over Pokemon cards. Grown men fighting over Pokemon cards in a Toronto Costco parking lot. I mean, this is where we're at, Canada. Wow. Canada is in big trouble. I mean, and it's Darren said, it's the gayest scrap ever. Like, I mean, guys were really swinging at each other and kicking.
Yeah, but they're like, you know, like, looking and they're swinging and they're just throwing, like, phantom kicks at nothing. One guy tried to do a drop kick. I mean, good for him. All right.
Oh, this is where we're at, Canada. So elbows up.
Elbows up, Canada. All right, let's jump over to this. I mean, at times I wish Alberta had the balls that Quebec did. I really do.
Back in the day, you mean?
No, even now. Even now. I mean, they do have the language thing. You know, it is kind of like a get out of jail free card on the without being called racist. You know, if Alberta does this, we're just going to get called racist.
Right, exactly. Because they're already known as race. I mean, the East and Vancouver already think.
Here's the thing. We could do this about English. We could still say, you got to speak fucking English, man. We aren't doing fucking, like, Mandarin. We're not doing Mandarin driving tests anymore.
No, but that's what America's doing, right? They're pulling people over and doing English tests on them, right? Did you hear that? Did you see that? Some of the truckers? They're like, if you don't know English, like, you're not driving a truck down.
Yeah, I mean, the trucking, whatever. I mean, I'm not even getting into that. I'm just saying, like, right now you can just go do your whole process of, like, do your training, do your license, do all of it in, like, Mandarin and a few other languages. It should not be an option, you know?
No, I thought we were bilingual. Bilingual.
French, fine. But, you know.
Well, not even better. Fine. But, I mean, like, we'll put up with it.
Quebec is replacing multiculturalism with integration. English Canada should do the same. I mean, can you imagine if Alberta even said that? You got to integrate.
They're already racist, according to Vancouverites and Torontonians.
How can a multi-ethnic democracy like Canada forge a common identity out of a population with many disparate countries of origin? The Quebec government says that multiculturalism is the wrong model for this tough task and is blazing a new trail that it calls integration.
What a concept. Wow, a new trail.
Is it a new one? Is it really a new one?
This would have been part of the plan all along. Like, we're going back to bring over 5 million people.
Can we just say that? Can we just be honest? We're going back to the old trail, like the way we used to do it 40 years ago.
Yeah.
Anyway, this approach offers a firm but compassionate model for integrating newcomers. English Canada should pay close attention. Bill 84, titled An Act for Respecting National Integration, seeks to establish a common culture which will serve as a vector for social cohesion that will allow for immigrants and persons identifying with cultural minorities to integrate into Quebec society. This common Quebec culture is described as the crucible that enables all Quebecers to form a united nation. The national integration model put forth in the bill lays out essential elements of Quebec culture that will not be compromised. These include democratic values, the equality of men and women, and the separation of religion and state. Immigrants are called upon to learn the French language, and if they have not yet mastered upon arrival, and to participate fully in Quebec society.
If they had not mastered it upon arrival, come on. What percentage have even tried upon arrival in French?
Pressed by reporters on why an integration bill is needed, Roberg outlined his concerns about immigrants becoming siloed into enclaves outside of mainstream society. We see that people are staying with their own group, and we want more diversity, and we want people to go and talk to each other. We don't want some ghettos. We want one society.
Well, how racist is
that? Asked to be more specific about how he wants immigrants to contribute to Quebec, Roberg explained that he wants to see a more united, socially cohesive society. Want them to go outside their communities and go speak with us, he said. We want to see them at La Fête Nationale du Québec. We want to see them everywhere. They are welcome. Quebec's integration approach is designed to foster a common culture that citizens of all backgrounds can graft themselves onto. It also establishes basic expectations, democracy, the equality of men and women, the separation of religion and state that immigrants must adhere to. Crucially, it does all this without vilifying newcomers themselves. Far from excluding immigrants, it invites them to participate more fully. I mean, that's a great way of putting it. This is the polar opposite of official multiculturalism, formally adopted by Pierre Trudeau. Where have we heard that name before? In 1971. And elaborated on in the 1988 Multiculturalism Act. The act declares multiculturalism reflects the cultural and racial diversity of Canadian society and acknowledges the freedom of all members of Canadian society to preserve, enhance, and share their cultural heritage. As Roberg pointed out, there is no mention of a common Canadian culture. Since its adoption, the Canadian multiculturalism has come under fire from various intellectuals and writers, including Neil Bousdoutas, Salem Munsur, and the late William Gardner. In 2011, Munsur wrote Delectable Lie, a liberal repudiation of multiculturalism, in which he argued that far from ushering in a peaceful, glittering cultural mosaic, multiculturalism as a policy has increased tensions and divisions in Canadian society.
Well, I don't understand. What did Trudeau do? Like, because... And 77 was in effect till 77. So the Citizen Act of 47 was still in effect until 77. There wasn't a formal written citizenship test. But I mean, isn't that what the citizenship test was supposed to be? Like, I knew guys that came over for specialized industry in the aircraft, and they had to become citizens. And it was a big deal, right, for him to become a Canadian citizen. Like, this guy from England, he was an engineer. And he was my boss at the time, and he had to become a citizen. Like, he was kind of like, I got to pass this test.
Or you're out on your ass.
So, I mean, there was a formalization of the test in the 2000s and then a major overhaul in 2010 and then recent adjust. So it's changed. It looks like all the way along from then. But I didn't know. Maybe I thought maybe they had gotten rid of it. Like, isn't that what that test was supposed to be? So people start to conform to what we expect in Canada?
Well, it seems like they didn't have to, as of at least 88, when it said that you could the freedom of all members of society to preserve and enhance their own culture. Which, where do you draw the line?
Right, right. I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, that, you know, you want to be free too, but there should be, I guess, a happy medium between the both of them. I mean, how about just no two-tier crime system to start with? I mean, it's not even their fault in a lot of ways.
Yeah, or just, I'll stop there. Over the last decades, there has been growing admission of the weakness of multiculturalism as a model for governing a diverse society. In 2010, the Chancellor of Germany, Angela Merkel, declared that multiculturalism in her country had utterly failed and later argued that immigrants must accept the country's cultural norms. In 2011, then Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, David Cameron, decreed the damage done to social cohesion by multicultural policies. Under the doctrine of state multiculturalism, we have encouraged different cultures to live separate lives, apart from each other and apart from the mainstream. Here in Canada, our leaders have not made this same admission, despite their increasingly obvious fractures appearing in our social fabric. In September 2023, a riot broke out in Northeast Calgary, with up to 150 people clashing and brandishing weapons in a dispute over political developments in Eritrea. Where the fuck is Eritrea?
Eritrea is in, I think it's in Africa, I think. Yeah.
Last November, violent clashes erupted between Hindu groups of Sikh Khalistani separatists, or between Hindu groups and Sikh Khalistani separatists in Brampton, Ontario. If Canada continues further along our present trajectory, we risk further eroding our social cohesion, national unity, and collective identity. Quebec's model of promoting the integration of newcomers into a common culture offers an alternative way forward. This model retains the compassion that is an important aspect of Canadian identity, except with the elbows up.
Sorry, buddy, I didn't mean to take over your screen share, but there's Eritrea right in the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden, right at Djibouti, right north of Djibouti.
What are they fighting about?
I don't know, but I mean, that's what makes me think it was, this is all on purpose. You don't bring 5 million people in over a few years and not like lay some groundwork and some plans on how we're going to integrate these people. Like,
I would have believed you of like a few years ago, but just after seeing like the general populace just, you know, fall to a complete state of disrepair, that I can only assume that the higher, you know, the more complicated things get, the more disrepair it's in. I mean,
I don't think so. I don't think so. You just, if you were in charge of all this, you would have to have a plan to increase immigration that much. I mean, it's like a hockey stick, the graph.
But when you're a drama teacher, you can just,
well, it's not his fault. I mean,
assume that the system's going to figure it out. I mean, I think that a lot of people are guilty of assuming the system's going to figure it out. I mean, I had people that work for me that just assume that everything's going to figure itself out. It's like, hey, buddy, like, you can grab the drawings and get going. Like, this is not, you know, this whole, like, from the get-go, we've just created a system that people can wander into and bounce off the walls and come out the other side. And just like, I don't know. I mean, they're idiots. I worry that, I mean, hopefully they are up there and they have a plan. I don't know that, you know, because the main takeaway sometimes is that we're just not fit to govern ourselves. We're just not.
any humans or just Canada? I mean,
well, probably any humans. Yeah. At scale, you know, you can govern yourself just fine up to a couple hundred people and then shit gets weird. And then
maybe a couple million.
And weird, you know, you start having haves and have nots. And
yeah, I've been thinking about that during this whole Team Canada thing. I'm like, really, this is just showing me. I thought we were going to be past this after COVID, and now here we are. Especially with Carney, how much is coming out on Carney, and the media is just covering for him, and everybody's just, oh yeah, Carney, he's not an insider at all. And I mean, meanwhile, he's like as deep as an insider as you could get. I mean, he is the epitome of coming in as an insider. So
then we got this blowjob, the opposition coming up with this thing.
What's this?
Well, this is Pierre's little thing. I mean, he was playing dress up again. So he dressed up in the Hola Mahala outfit. I don't have a picture of it, but it's disgusting.
What is that? What's Hola Mahala?
I don't know. Let's read it and find out. So this is his statement. Statement from conservative leader Pierre Poilievre on Hola Mahala, March 14th, for immediate release. The Honorable Pierre Poilievre, leader of the Conservative Party of Canada and the official opposition, released the following statement on Holomahala. In 1701, the first ever Holomahala was established at Anandpur Sahib. Where's that? India?
Anandpur? Yeah, that's in India.
When Guru Gobind Singh Ji, the 10th Guru of the Sikhs, displayed Sikh martial arts over three centuries later. I mean, can you imagine getting this in your email box from your conservative fucking party leader? Can you imagine? Over three centuries later, this iconic tradition is still practiced by Sikhs around the world. I mean, do I need to go on? It displays Gatka horse riding and Sikh martial arts are a powerful symbol of Sikh cultural pride and endurance. As festivals and parades are held in communities across Canada, all Canadians can share in Holomahala's timeless message of justice and the fight against oppression, strengthened by our common values. We have common values with the Sikhs. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Of faith, family, and freedom. To all our Canadian Sikhs celebrating today, may you continue to inspire future generations. So I don't know. I mean,
so the problem with dipping your toe into all this is now he's going to have to do this letter for every single little
thing. I mean, it's disgusting. At least I almost prefer Trump's way of just saying the blacks love me, you know, just do it like that. The Latinos love me. The Sikhs, they love me. Just say they love me and wear your fucking suit and come down there. There's just something completely degrading about playing dress up that it's, I mean, Carney's doing it already too, but that's like just one little thing that Pierre could rise above that. I think he would get a bunch more respect for than he thinks. Nobody wants to be dressing up like them.
Did he say it for Women's Day the other day or for Women's Month? Or?
One for every day, but it's like Women's Day. It's like, whatever. What are you going to do? At least it's more of a Canadian thing than fucking Holomahala. I mean, this is craziness.
What I'm saying is you're going to leave people. You're going to start leaving people out, right? That's why you just shouldn't get into any of this stuff.
Well, it's okay because we're supposed to have integration. I mean, it should be okay to leave out Holomahala. It should be okay to leave out Ramadan. Did you grow up? Did you know what the fuck Ramadan was when you were a kid waiting for Christmas?
I was a sheltered little white boy in Canada.
I was a sheltered little Indian boy in Canada, and I had no idea what either of those things were. So, I mean, learn about it. One thing, great. Do we have to have it in all the stores and celebrate it? I mean, I think all of Canada could do with some integration rules. You know what I mean? Really, like, I don't have to worry about it out where I am, but in the cities, you know, you just have weird little rules about what you can bring for lunch and what you can do. I mean, I don't even agree with not bringing nuts to school, man. If the kid's allergic to nuts, that's not on, you know? It was like when we were kids, if you were allergic to nuts, that was on you. You better fucking watch it because lots of stuff has nuts in it.
No, I see your point, though. I mean, it's getting ridiculous. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I digress.
Don't even get us into why kids are now allergic to nuts. We won't even go there. This is the A-list slowdown / outlawed run-up, rundown. Roundup
there on this show. Let's go over to this. So I didn't want to go through this. This is a little bit older. It is March 14th again. What's today? It's the 19th already. It seems like it's been forever since we did a show. You know what it is the Sunday one now is not as Canadian centric. So some of my stuff is getting a little older. But on the last show, I was complaining about how what I wanted to hear Doug Ford or not Doug Ford. What's your guy's name again? Mo. Premier Mo.
Scott Moe.
That's right. I wanted more because he was complaining about where Carney was going, which I think is not as big of a deal as having an election. So I was happy to see this tweet come out from Daniel Smith that says, can you hear the dog barking?
I thought I heard something, but not really, no.
Okay, now that the Prime Minister Mark Carney has been officially sworn in, his first item of business should be to call a general election. I'm extremely concerned that this cabinet includes most of the same ministers responsible for the most damaging government policies leveled by Ottawa against Alberta in our over 100-year history.
Good job. Wow.
We are gravely concerned that plans to significantly increase the industrial carbon tax will be just as damaging to Alberta's economy as the consumer carbon tax has been. The Prime Minister also has not condemned harmful policies such as the proposed emission cap, which continues to threaten our energy sector, Bill C-69, which still hampers critical infrastructure projects, failed bail policies, which continue to put our communities at risk, undermining the safety and security that Albertans deserve, gun bans that target law-abiding hunters and sports shooters, open border policies, which are allowing over 2 million people per year to enter Canada, the plastic ban, which put billions of dollars of investment and thousands of jobs at risk, Bill C-59, which bans businesses from communicating about their environmental goals, the electric vehicle mandate, which calls for 100% of new vehicles sold to be electric by 2035, the Sustainable Jobs Act, which aims to transition energy workers to a net zero economy as they work to shut down the energy sector, the clean electricity regulations that will make our electricity grid 100 times less reliable and increase electricity prices by 35%. Our province has always been a leader in innovation, economic growth, and responsible resource development. We will continue to stand up for our industries, push back against policies that unfairly target Alberta, and fight for a fair deal within Confederation. The Prime Minister must put Canada first and call an election immediately to ensure that whoever is leading this country has a four-year mandate from all Canadians, especially in light of the ongoing tariff conflict with the U.S. So I think she has a little bit of a longer statement than that, but that's probably enough of it, you know?
That's a pretty good list there, eh? That doesn't even include what what Trump was asking for about the border and the drugs and all that. I mean, that's kind of what I have here is that report, if you want to get into that, or do you want to, I mean, I can go a number of ways, the EU or this report.
Okay. Start the report. Start, do the EU first. Cause I get to run. I'm going to go kill a dog.
Oh, okay.
I'll be right back.
So there's there's a post here from Frank or Ryan Gerritsen. The Join the EU PSYOP is in full play. Not only have we seen polls and articles, but then Carney says today in France, whoops, excuse me, oh my God, I'm burped. Good thing Darren wasn't here for that. That we are the most European country outside of Europe. The WEF want the US to stop being the global superpower. This is why Canada joining the US is deemed the end of the world, and Canadians are being brainwashed into hating all things American. But join the EU. Well, that's good, of course. So this is that whole thing after, like, oh, we're our sovereign country, Team Canada. Hey, let's join the EU. Like, all of a sudden that becomes a thing. Hey, Darren, that's pretty funny. But then, of course, I mean, I got this thing from Lawyer Lisa here. And then what do we hear from them at the EU? I mean, this is hard to believe. It's real. I'm not even going to say. I'm going to play this for a few minutes, and then we're going to see here.
Welcome back to World Affairs in Context, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me today. It does feel as though things are becoming more and more dystopian in a way, as the European Union is rearming and creating two separate funds worth nearly 8 billion euros for its militarization purposes. It recently announced what I would call an Orwellian plan. Frankly, I could not believe what I read. The European Union is actively exploring ways to use 10 trillion euros of citizens' savings, that's right, of citizens' savings, private savings and private investments, to be clear, for the EU defense / offense purposes. The European Union leadership has plans to use private capital. If you're in the European Union, this would be your savings. So they're going to use private capital for their military ambitions. Last week, I uploaded a video of Christine Lagarde announcing the launch of the digital euro, the CBDC, the central bank digital currency, that is planned for later this year. Make sure that you watch that video. I included a clip of her sharing the details where she shares the launch date. So my question then becomes, are they rolling out the central bank digital currency to assist with using private savings for military needs?
How's that, eh? Let's join the EU. I mean, not that they're used. I don't think they're going to use the citizens' money. I think it's as collateral. Like, they're going to use it as capital. So say, hey, we're going to borrow billions and billions of dollars, but we have backup because we have all this, the people's own capital investments that we can, what, in time of war, dip into if we absolutely have to. But oh no, we won't do that. I mean, this is insanity where we're at. Why? I was thinking the other day too. Today, actually, why are we sending, why are we borrowing money, us and the States, and I don't know, maybe UK and Europe, but why are we borrowing money to send it abroad to other things? Why can't they borrow their own money? Like, why can't the EU just, why can't they just borrow money? Why can't they just print money like we print money?
Yeah, I don't know.
What's wrong with the picture here? I don't understand why we have to go further into debt to help all these other countries around the globe. And why can't they just do it themselves? Why can't they get a bank loan from the IMF or whatever? I mean, isn't that what this, what's that word? What's the guy, the economic hitman stuff is all about? Why are we still Perkins. Funding this stuff?
Perkins.
Oh boy.
John Perkins. Well, yeah. Speaking of getting robbed and why are we still funding this stuff? I mean, it's a perfect segue to pull this up. This ain't the whole report. It's from the FraserInstitute.org. It's just a screenshot. I grab, but this is contributions to the CPP comparing provinces. So this is, let's actually go back for a second quick, but this is interesting. So this is for the next person arguing, this is from Alberta Secession, for the next person arguing about Alberta leaving the CPP and doing their own thing. So here's contributions to the CPP comparing provinces. There's a graphic here of, you know, the people of Alberta sending all their money to Ottawa, which is, you know, you find stuff from this from 100 years ago in the old article. So we recently released an analysis of Albertans' contributions to the Canadian Pension Plan, CPP, over the last 10 years, 2008 to 2017. The analysis compared the contributions paid by Alberta workers with spending by the CPP on retirees and other beneficiaries residing in Alberta. The study found that in the most recent year of analysis, 2017, Alberta workers contributed $2.9 billion more to the CPP than was spent on beneficiaries in the province. The cumulative 10-year number was $27.9 billion. So what's that, about 8% of the entire fund? An important and interesting question not covered in the study was the comparison of Alberta to the other 8 participating provinces. The chart below illustrates the provincial comparisons over the 10-year period of study. So this is
based on per capita or anything like that? Or wow, that's quite the graph.
Hundreds of millions. So
so is that just net? That's net.
This is just net, right? This is net. But there's not the only part. What? The only one, Newfoundland, these three might have a lower population than you, right? Not a lot, though.
Yeah, they all have a lower population, but I don't think it's based on that because look at Saskatchewan's up still and they have a low population.
So. That's because you're getting hosed. I mean, Alberta's only got a population of fucking 4 million people, you know, under 4 million people when this study came out.
Yeah.
So here it is. The chat, of course, the chart shows Alberta's up, you know, way up above all the rest. BC's around five billion. Saskatchewan's probably one or two. Manitoba, 1 or 2, and Ontario about 7. Alberta clearly contributes more than any other province, despite its comparatively smaller population to Ontario and British Columbia. Specifically, Alberta's $27.9 billion net contribution over this period is almost 4 times greater than Ontario's, which has 3 times the population.
That's crazy. So it's not even per capita. It's like...
And nearly 5.5 times greater than BC's, despite having a much smaller population.
How is that possible? Honestly, physically, how is it physically possible? What's that? Maybe I don't know.
It's fucking nuts. Here's just another one that shows the... Another graph from the Fraser Institute that just shows this is more about equalization, right? So in the last 15 years, from 2007 to 2022, Alberta's put out $244 billion. BC's put out $46.9 billion. Ontario's put out $41 billion. Saskatchewan's taken in $19 billion. Nunavut, $25 billion. Newfoundland, $35 billion. New Brunswick, $86 billion. Manitoba, $94 billion. Nova Scotia, $120 billion. And coming in at number one, $327 billion, is Quebec.
I don't know. I was gonna ask you about the CPP. I don't know if you saw that. There's some sort of cancellation for electric vehicle plant or something. And I was like, does this affect our CPP investments in the Chinese EVs?
No, that was just our taxes. So that was just our tax dollars that got lost when they closed that plant and that they were going to make because a Swedish company went under. Yeah, that was just $2.7 billion of our tax dollars.
No, but what I'm getting at is we invested in our money in the CPP into Chinese EVs.
Oh, did we?
Yeah. So, like, doesn't that affect? Does that play a role? Like, do we get? Does that maybe that help? Now that you're saying it's Sweden, maybe it helps our Chinese investment.
Maybe.
I mean, maybe you could. Can you double check that? Maybe I'll grok that quickly and see.
But we put 100% tariff on the Chinese cars.
Oh, that's what it was. That's what I asked. I said, does this tariff on the Chinese cars affect our investment in the Chinese EVs? Like, really?
Probably not. Honestly, our market is so small that probably not. At the end of the day, China, their market is almost so big internally. I mean, how many cars does China need a year? Do they even need to ship? And then they got like the Philippines and all that shit over on that side of the world. They're just 40 million Canadians. It probably wouldn't even take much of a hit.
The Canadian pension plan invested $604 million in China's electric vehicle sector. Just $604 million.
That's peanuts, buddy. That's nothing. It's nothing. All right, you want to go next? I got Oxford stuff and some Ruby Dalla stuff.
Well, do you remember I lost that report because Naya Fannerstill, one of my favorite ex-posters, who does a lot of media deconstruction, she like put out this report thing, and now she's gone. Her account's gone again. I don't know if she's taking a break or if she got canceled or whatever, but I was searching all over for it, and even like AI wasn't helping me find it. And then I came across it on, I think Frank Vaughn and Our Greater Destiny blog here has this ICAIE. Now I could not remember the acronym and, cause it doesn't really say anything. It's not a good acronym word, but it's a colossal scale of international cartel triad crime in Canada, Part 2 of 2. So I wanted to, this was from Frank Vaughn too, where he did this like video about, I think we talked about it, Canada being a narco state. And he talks about how the lowball figure of the percentage of our GDP, which was illicit. I think he came up with 12%, highball might be 25%. And it's talking about, this is where he's talking about this report as well. And I'm not going to read from this because I'm just skimming through this to show you where I found it kind of, right? But this has never been addressed. All this stuff has never been addressed, right? It's got to have something to do with why Trump went after us so hard, right? Talking about the fentanyl in the bus, because we're a major risk to the U.S. right now. The bus don't disrupt supply. They're talking about this report. Leaders in Canada are lying to you. Here's an actual link to the report here. Political elections. So I just wanted to show you that, but I'm going to go into the actual report here, which I have highlighted. So I'm going to present this new screen here. Slides and should I do the slides and PDFs? Do you ever do the slides and PDFs or do you just share your actual
screen? I don't do the slide. It always just goes sideways. It never works.
Okay, let me try this out here. Then I'll just share the screen, the window. So here it is right here. I'll try doing a double page. So it's the growing harms of cross-border illicit trade vectors and threat convergence to Canada's national security. Now, there's not many people really have dug into this. I don't know why. It seems like this should be like front and center right now, but it's from the fall of 2023. So it's not too long ago, like a year and a half old, right? But I mean, this must have been what kind of gave, you know, the Trump admin some fodder, right? So they go into illicit trade across Canada, the nexus to global illegal economy, hubs for transnational criminals and terrorist financiers, specific illicit markets. So they talk about narcotics and opioids, fake pharmaceuticals, alcohol, tobacco, like both of those being illegal, other crimes and frauds and cross-border money laundering. And then they have a whole bunch of key recommendations. So I'm going to just skip down to the bottom so you know who it's from, because I was like, I thought it was some international body, but this is from the International Coalition Against the Illicit Economies. It's a national security-centric NGO based in Washington. So right away, I'm like, oh boy, okay, we, you know, I just hate that it's an NGO from Washington, but let's see here, including former members of the public sector, companies and prominent organizations from the private sector and civil society to mobilize collective action to combat cross-border illicit threats. So, I mean, they have these labs and a team, highly skilled national security service providers, product vendors, blah, 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 with an eye towards full spectrum investigations. They bridge the gap between private industries and the government public sector. So, I mean, they look like they did a pretty in-depth analysis. Here's the policy briefs and stuff, there, and additional ones that they did, right? And here's a couple of the guys that did the report. And here's all the footnotes. I mean, look at the investigation and the footnotes. So this tells me at least they've done their work and they've given us all the data, all the footnotes of where it came from. There's some of Sam Cooper's work in here, OECD numbers, right? There's lots of interesting Department of State stuff. There's a Sam Cooper there. So like mainstream articles and stuff like that. So I'm just going to read some highlights because this is like super important. So introduction: in recent months, Canadian corporate leaders, investigative journalists, politicians, defense and intelligence officials, law enforcement agencies. So it's going through the whole gamut here. I'm just going to change this to single page. There we go. have been raising concerns about the increasing national security threats, inclusive of economic ones, posed by illicit trade vectors emanating from within Canada and externally. So, I mean, this had to be worse than we thought. If this is, they're highlighting that all these, you know, all this stuff is saying like, hey, write a report about this. Illicit trade in Canada and globally is booming. Illicit markets are not harmless and can have tremendous human, economic, societal, and security costs and consequences. Illicit economies come with vulnerabilities to peace and security, including corruption, violence, chaos, organized crime, terrorist financing, and instability. I'm gonna keep reading on it because I got some views here I want your opinion on too. So in the past, Canadians have focused on mid-level threat actors driven by profit. So for example, the Hells Angels and stuff, right? Driven by profit. So there's a theme here too that this isn't just driven by profit, like immediate profit. In lieu of more lethal transnational criminal networks that have blended with geopolitical global interests, for example, networks from China, Iran, and Russia. And it goes into all this detail here. It's totally worth the read. Illicit, and then it goes, so this is nexus to global illegal economy. Illicit trade is a global phenomenon, has been a key driver in undermining the financial and economic integrity of Canada. Transnational organized crime has been described as one of the preeminent criminal threats to Canada and its global partners. Transnational organized crime groups and professional money launderers are key threat actors helping to expand illicit markets and corruptive influence across Canada. And it goes into, I don't want to get into like reading all these names and organizations and stuff like that. Like it talks about some of the terrorist ones and some ones we've already heard of. Especially for YouTube, I don't think we need to start naming things. People can go to the report and look, but this is hubs for transnational criminals and terrorist financiers. So as journalist Sam Cooper and others have reported, there is a convergence of organized crime in Canada with complicity from state actors in Mexico, China, Iran, and even Russia that are profiting from the booming multi-billion dollar illicit markets in Canada. Increasingly, international law enforcement agencies have noted the key role in that Canada plays in facilitating threat actors. So it is interesting because, of course, we're just north of the States and, you know, we have like picture this, right? Our docks in Vancouver and in the East, like they search 1% of the container shipments, right? Maybe the States does a way better job. I don't know what their imports like from shipping, but I mean, we just bring these big shipping containers in and we don't even check them. So here's the different categories of the report. I'm going to skip through all this stuff and really just focus on a couple of the things here. So this is the drug one, impact along the U.S.-Canadian border. According to the United States, drug smuggling, how many percent do you think drug smuggling has increased along the border? Since 2021.
400%.
600%. So, I mean, I don't know. Is this all disinfo?
In 3 years?
In 2 years. So, according to the United States, drug smuggling, see, this is what's so infuriating, because we know of all the corruption that's happening in Canada that the media is ignoring. And then behind the scenes, there's all this other, like, this web of sort of darker crime and corruption that's happening. And we can't even address the stuff that's in the light. According to the United States, drug smuggling has increased by almost 600% along the northern border with Canada since 2021, including a 26% increase in fentanyl. In August 2023, a Canadian national was arrested in New York trying to smuggle. So see, this doesn't get put into the 1% category, right? A Canadian national arrested in New York to smuggle 850 pounds of cocaine along the U.S.-Canada border. Asian drug trafficking networks that operate in Canada also smuggle synthetic drugs into the U.S. across the northern border. Chinese triads have also been quite active in smuggling cocaine and heroin into Canada from the United States. So both ways, I guess, but...
both ways.
I'm just going to go back a little bit. Okay, I just want to... I don't want to talk about like illegal... I mean, they get into tobacco, which is way bigger than I thought, and how the reserves and the indigenous people have a role in this whole thing as well. They talk about the First Nations in here involved in the illegal tobacco trade, other crimes, and...
Wait, who's saying it's illegal? Who gets to decide that the indigenous tobacco trade is illegal?
Illicit factories?
The Jay Treaty.
First Nations, state. Tax exemption, Section 87 of the Indian Act. I mean, I don't know. So maybe it's, how can they say it's illegal if there's an exemption for it? That's a good point. At an Interpol conference, experts ranked Canada as a major international threat, which included funds from these money laundering operations potentially being used to fund terrorism domestically and internationally, and other illicit trade activities, including drug and weapons trafficking. That's like Interpol. So I don't know. Canada's getting a pretty bad reputation here. So this is from the money laundering section. Canada cross-border money laundering, TBML. I can't tell you what that means right now. It'll come to me. Canada is currently a hub of illicit trade and crime convergence. It represents a weak link within the international financial system for bad actors and threat networks to make illicit profits and launder and hide their dirty money. These illicit financial flows help to fuel greater criminality and corruption. According to a 2022 report by the U.S. Department of State, tens of billions of dollars are laundered every year in Canada involving the proceeds of illegal drug trafficking, fraud, corruption, counterfeiting and piracy, tobacco smuggling and trafficking, among other illicit activity. Foreign-generated proceeds of crime are laundered in Canada, and professional third-party, how do we get into the third-party money laundering business? That's a significant concern.
Give us a call. You can use our donate button. No, I'm just kidding.
Canada's Criminal Intelligence Service in 2020 estimated $36 billion to $91 billion was being laundered and fully integrated in Canic. This is what you talked about last show. That's why they don't want to get rid of it, because it helps inject cash into the economy. This was being laundered and fully integrated in Canada's economy annually, with over 175 organized crime gangs involved, half with international ties. So what? 80 organized crime gangs, international ties, laundering money in Canada. And we're broken economically. Besides, that's not like we're a strong country in any metric at all. No wonder why Trump says we're like why they want us, right? We're a huge risk.
Yeah.
So they get in the free trade zone. I'm almost done here. 3,500 global number of FTZSs. This is a free trade zone, right? Actually, it talks about Panama here. Largest business family in the Colón free zone itself, a free trade zone in the hemisphere. But I mean, I think this is part of the problem. Maritime trafficking is the favored method of smuggling illicit drugs, counterfeits, and other contraband across Americas through routes in the Atlantic, Pacific, and the Caribbean Sea, Gulf of Mexico. The urgency is due to the fact that the cartels and organized criminals have co-opted a growing number of governments at all levels. These criminalized states use transnational organized criminal groups as instruments of state policy, rather combating them, fundamentally realigning the purpose and objectives of the state. See, this is what's happening in Canada, I think. So here's the key recommendations, which is a long list. And this is kind of where I want to get your feedback a little bit here. But they talk about all of these activities and threat convergence networks represent a growing harm to Canadian business and citizens, Canada's national security, and significant multidimensional impacts to Canada's trading and security partners. No longer is profit the sole motivator for these criminals. See, this is key, right? But these threat convergence activities are now being weaponized against rule of law institutions and democratic states for generating more political power, building illicit empires, and financing greater insecurity globally. Greater insecurity globally. So the national security policy, there's a whole bunch here, like elevate illicit trade as a national security policy. These are recommendations, right? Call for Canadian national security strategy that addresses the converging threats. Examine the current effectiveness of efforts. Call for production of national security annual reports. Tackle the drug-related violence stemming from the trafficking of coke, heroin, fentanyl, and opioids, marijuana, and other contraband. Continue to detect and disrupt drug trafficking, develop a comprehensive approach to dismantle drug trafficking, examine in greater depth child sexual exploitation. I mean, they're saying right in here, like that's part of the key recommendations, right? Like examine in greater depth the child trafficking. I mean, and then it goes on threat intelligence. I'm not going to read all these key things here, but there is a couple I highlighted here. Cross-border law enforcement operation and intel fusion hub. See, this is where it's getting scary, right? Sever the illicit flow across Canada of drugs, opioids, people, weapons, counterfeits, and other illicit goods and contraband through investigations and prosecutions of key TOC networks, as well as through the targeting of TOC networks, enabling financial wherewithal and infrastructure, and address the current stovepiping of intelligence between federal agencies in Canada, federal provincial task forces, and provincial to provincial investigations. Enhance information sharing mechanisms to employ effective whole of government anti-crime responses. So, you know, this is where it gets scary, right? Identify foreign kleptocrats, oligarchs, and politically exposed persons who have corrupt relationships targeting Canadian officials and political institutions and freezing and confiscating their assets and deny their visas. I mean, this is all already like known by the U.S., right? All this stuff. And they're talking about laws here. Like it's impossible to do the, it's impossible to fight these crimes due to the risk posed to their law enforcement intelligence assets. So it's saying it is well known within operational sectors of Canadian and international policing, that case law, there's a couple examples of this case law, make it virtually impossible to prosecute certain criminal and threat convergent cases and hamper intelligent international cooperation. So what they're saying is that the way the system's set up, it's impossible. So why not go light on crime? Because you can't go tough on crime in Canada. So what scares me is like if they start implementing some of these solutions, which it's hard to argue that some of them should be implemented, like how does that then start going against our freedoms and making it tougher for us to, you know, like they're gonna now, you know what I mean? Now there's gonna be extra security everywhere, extra people digging into your finances. Like, where does it end, right? Now that they've created this big boogeyman, now they're going to come after implement all these key ideas. And where's that going to lead?
Yeah.
Right? It's like it's a big setup in a way.
Or it's just like the design of, you know, that's in some ways, it's just what these guys, some of these like sci-fi dystopian people were able to pick out of the culture way back in the day is that, I mean, I think that technology just has an inevitable, like it's by its own sort of design. It's just like, it seeks like uniformity and it tracks everything. I mean, it was just a matter of time until someone who figured out that this shit was tracking everything and could weaponize it in a bunch of different ways.
And how do you stop it from being weaponized? You know, how do you stop it from being implemented for the good of humanity, the real good, not the greater good, but the real good, like to protect our sovereignty? Like, how is it ever going to be?
I just put a compilation together today that the essential works of H.G. Wells, what was it? Something for the New World Order.
The World Brain?
No, because it's all because he has those all the books that we did of his are very sort of manifestos for a New World Order. Because I mean, he's one of those guys that like everything he was doing was sort of pointed in that direction almost benevolently.
Yes, I would say I would agree with you. I mean, I know people in the conspiracy community want to say, oh, H.G. Wells was this and that. But I mean, I think they were scared back then of what was happening with the connectivity of the world. And they wanted to, you know, they wanted everybody to start learning from the same playbook, English language, the whole world brain type thing that wasn't necessarily nefarious. I mean, he might have had a clouded look at humanity from an elite perspective, I think, for sure. But I don't think they were trying to put a dystopian thing in place. I think they were scared of young men around the world with no meaning.
Yeah. And here we are. Got Jordan Peterson riling them all up.
I mean, here's just
how weird. I mean, Buddy got a bunch of support and then turned into like a Bond villain character. It's crazy.
Who, Jordan?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I mean, even if he doesn't turn into one, he looks like one.
Do you think so nowadays?
Oh, yeah. You see his jacket. I put this on my Facebook. And
oh, the jackets. Oh, yeah. He's like a total Batman villain. Oh, yeah. So, dear here, elbows up crowd. This is from the food professor. Take a look at this chart. Signed, TFP. Want to take a hard stance against the United States on trade? Go ahead. So look at this chart. I mean, you must have seen this floating around, right?
Oh, yeah. Like I said, I shared this on my Facebook.
Oh, this one.
It said, elbows up, morons.
Yeah. Growth based on GDP per capita.
40 times. 40 times.
This is per capita, right? This is
40 times.
Canada's at the end of this list. 0.5% growth in the last 10 years. Germany's at 4.7. It goes all the way up. Australia, 8.1. Even Australia, 8.1. Even the UK, 7.7. Italy, 13.2. Denmark, 18.9. And then the US at the top at 20.7. We don't do anything anymore. We don't make anything. We are just useless.
Yeah. 40 times. They're 40 times higher GDP per capita than us. I mean, we're like Mexico. We're worse than Mexico. I mean, sorry, Mexicans, but I don't know. I don't really have another good comparison.
Well, I mean, they've got we're in the winter. We're supposed to be productive people to survive the winters. I mean, Mexico, they have the hot sun and the siestas. I mean, you can't blame them.
Yeah, I guess.
We're supposed to be more productive up here in the north.
Well, it's not looking good. It's not looking good. All right, where do you want to go to next? I got a few things left we should get through at least. Let's go to this one. We'll give you some COVID vibes. So this is from BC Rising, sent to me from one of the listeners, which is save our ostriches, sharing information. So you remember the ostrich thing, right?
Yep.
It's not over. The ostriches are not yet saved. The round one call has been paused and they're in a round two judicial review fight for their lives. So There's sort of a timeline on here of why they want to kill these ostriches. Did it? I thought it said on here. Here it is. So what would you do if after 30 years of raising and caring for animals on your farm, the government suddenly showed up and ordered you to slaughter them? This is the heartbreaking reality for the farmers of Universal Ostrich Farms located in the remote town of Edgewood, British Columbia.
I don't think you want Darren to answer that question. That's just a rhetorical question, right? I mean, I'd be hard not to just snap.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't be good. This is the heartbreak, blah, blah, blah. For over three decades, Karen Esperson and Dave Belinsky have devoted their lives to raising up to 500 ostriches on their farm, which is known for its groundbreaking research on the robust immune systems of these remarkable creatures. Oh, well, that's why they want them dead. Can't have any immune system help. The farm is home to the immune system is a conspiracy theory, didn't you know? The farm is home to a herd of non-commercial ostriches, some of which have been with the farmers for over 34 years. Karen's daughter, Katie Paisney, grew up with these ostriches and considers them more like family. Each has its own name and personality, like Frank, Lulu, and Q-Tip. However, an illness in December 2024 led to drastic government interventions threatening both the lives of the ostriches and the livelihoods of the farmers who care for them. The article's cut off. I don't want to go to the whole thing, but basically the next day, December 4th, the PCR results came back positive for HIV. They PCR tested the ostriches.
Oh, this is infuriating.
And the results came back positive for H5N1, avian influenza, and a cull order was issued for the family to destroy all their ostriches by February 1st, 2025. The farmers were also given a set of quarantine requirements with instructions on how to dispose of and bury their animals, along with a link to mental health support line. So,
and a maid option too.
Yeah, if they didn't, it would have been a $200,000 fine and 6 months in jail. On January 2nd, the farmers received an email from CFIA stating their animals qualified for a depopulation exemption. I mean, that's what something I'll be. I feel like I'll be applying for this at some point in my life. A depopulation exemption due to their rare and valuable genetics. I mean, I'm an Indian. I have valuable genetics. So, anyway, I'll leave it at that. The Canadian government trying to kill people's ostriches, which is, you know.
I wonder what this honest question, real question, what was the cycle count on the PCR test? I mean, honestly, I've heard some nasty stories about these bird flu cycle counts, like up at 35 or 40.
Even higher than the COVID ones. And then I'm going to finish up my content for today with this. This is over at my buddy Table Salt. And on why they disqualified Ruby Dalla. I mean, I don't know if they meant to say this, but this is CBC.
But Stevie, it seems like Ruby Dalla, who we are hoping to have on the show maybe tomorrow, is going to go into that debate on Monday and without the translation and again on Tuesday. And she is going to attack the front runner pretty aggressively. Like, she brings a very interesting, based on what she's doing on social media, that is my impression. What kind of a dynamic does it
I certainly create? Hope that the party finds a legitimate reason to disqualify her candidacy before the debate.
Really?
I hope so. I think that
God,
serious campaign.
So this is before they kicked her out, right?
This is CBC.
Yeah, this is before they kicked her out. So this is an old clip, but and around at the time, I didn't see this till later.
And meanwhile, this is the insane universal, like we're living in different universes. I'm hearing Dalla. I'm following her on social media because I'm like, this woman sounds amazing. She's like common sense. She's just gonna like a bull in a china shop in a way. And it's like sounding great to me. I'm like, man, that's almost making me want to vote liberal. This lady's sounds very smart, very articulate. She's a businesswoman and she's talking common sense. And here we are. They're scared shitless of her.
They want her out. They want to find a way to disqualify
her. Certainly, that the party finds a legitimate reason to disqualify
legitimate.
Her candidacy.
Legitimate.
Really?
I hope so. I think that, you know, we've got a serious campaign. Canadians are looking for a serious leader. I think that's one of the reasons that Carney is doing very well. I would really hate for us to lose as a partisan, to lose that momentum because someone's trying to turn the debates into a circus.
That's a tough thing to do. Yeah. I mean, they've already disqualified Chandra Arya, right?
Yeah.
What?
Unbelievable.
But Stevie, it seems like...
They found a way. So, of course, he says, this is why the liberal elite disqualified Ruby. It's the same reason Carney avoids the media. He's weak in debates. He's going to get eaten alive by Paul Avera. I mean, it's hard not to agree with.
I don't think. I mean, come on.
The problem is, Paul Avera is a fucking lobball. He's going to be probably dressed up like something. I wonder if they'll both play dress up. I mean, Mark Carney was dressed up as something else today. I don't even know what. He's wearing like an alien shirt.
That weird collared shirt? That's because it's Ukraine colors. That's why.
Is that how that is? That's what's going on there?
That's my prediction. That's what I first noted.
Wonder if I can find it.
I don't know, dude. It's kind of crazy what's happening right now. I mean, this is, can I, you know,
he
what?
I like a cheap shirt every time the media talks to him. I mean, this is a problem. I mean, I've seen the guy lose his temper more times than I've seen Trudeau lose it in a decade.
Well, this is new territory for him. I mean, I know I just called him an insider.
He's used to just being the boss.
He's used to just hiding in the background. And
or if he says something, everyone listens, right? He's always been like high enough up that even if you're talking out your ass, you know what I mean? We've all have bosses like this where you're like, he's flapping his gums and you're like, oh my God, what are you talking about? Anyway, let's play it quick. Here's this thing. It's not Ukraine colors, is it?
Well, it's blue and yellowy orange, kind of, yeah. It's not as bright as I would have liked, but.
What is it?
What? It's.
Is it some sort of Inuit?
I like how you thought it, because I was thinking the same thing, to be honest. Oh, look, the guy on the right's kind of got one, too. I didn't notice that. I swear that's added in. He was alone with the weird coat, so I think that guy on the right's been photoshopped in or something. Unless this
looks like a weird hoodie. It's like a weird hoodie.
Yeah, he's got a weird hoodie. Yeah, like a tracksuit on.
All right, let's hear him talk. I mean, every time he talks, he just says some retard. I haven't even listened to this yet. This is a cold movie. I
have a call with President Trump in the coming days. What are your expectations for the president in that call?
This is a terrible outfit. It makes him look weak. I mean, his problem is he's got this weird little head. They got to figure out a way to dress that up.
I mean, it's like the kazoo right?
I mean, like Olivier, he could lose the glasses, put on some shoulder pads. He looks like a little bit less of a loser, but I don't know what they're going to do about this guy.
Hang on a second.
Oh, this is making fun of him.
Okay, yeah, go ahead, play it. I shouldn't...
This is going to be this is the counter.
Yeah, this is.
I think, let me say a few things. The first is that the President of the United States, the Prime Minister of Canada, but certainly the President of the United States has many responsibilities, and there are many issues. I can think of many geostrategic issues that the President is helping to lead on. You can think of events most recently in with respect to the Houthis and all the way through to trade and other aspects. So there's a wide range of issues to be discussed when we do connect. With respect to trade, I look forward to at the appropriate time having a discussion as to sovereign nations that is comprehensive, not targeted at one issue.
Now, I'm not making fun of someone we're the last people who should be teasing people for saying ums and ahs, but I was hoping he was going to lose his temper, but that doesn't seem to happen until the reporter's asking questions. I mean, it is kind of funny to watch. It's like
apparently it's female reporters more so than male too, so keep an eye open for that.
Ooh, we need a honeypot him.
No, it's opposite. I think he's so misogynistic, he might not respect female reporters' questions.
That's what I mean.
Honeypot him with a Macron gun.
Silly broad in there. We'll put some silly broad in there.
Oh, honeypot him for like to snap on it. Just,
you know, whatever.
So, you know, you're supposed to disclose your assets before. I mean, did you see him snap? I mean, I don't want to play a bunch of Carney clips, but how about this guy? How about a warning to Alberta?
Okay.
Hey guys.
I wrote so you can take it away.
Okay. I got a couple of climate change things after this to stick with Carney too.
Hey guys, to all my Canadian friends out there.
I don't like the volume button on
it. I love you guys.
Here's an interesting thing. Pause it. There's a couple of American people have told me that the rhetoric down there seems to be that Alberta and Saskatchewan are becoming states.
Yeah. Keep that up.
That map that's been floating around is pretty good.
Heck to you, you know. I really would hope you guys become a 51st state, but I need to show you guys something. When you guys are complaining about, oh, you're going to shut our oil on gas, we need you in the U.S. or all this stuff, you know. I want to show you what I'm doing right now in the Gulf of America, right? It's pretty serious. You guys need to understand that what's going on right now in America. Let's show you guys.
So he takes us out to the deck of the ship or the platform that he's on in the Gulf.
See that right there? All those compass stands and stuff? Currently going out.
And he shows us a bunch of stands, painted stands that are on the deck that I guess they're using for installing stuff.
Currently going out for Shell Offshore. And I'm prepping 3 new sites for 19 new oil and gas wells that will give us 300,000 more barrels a day. All this development will be finished by about 8 months. This is only one development happening in the Gulf of America. We have so many construction vessels coming to the Gulf of America right now to make some money because we're doing what we have to do. We have oil and gas. We're not going to need anything from you guys by the end of 26. I'm sorry. It's just while we become energy sufficient, you know, independent, we're putting hundreds of thousands of Americans to work over here for great rates, right? And we're going to lower our costs in the next 2 years, right? 2 years. So while you guys are arguing and doing this stuff, you guys are in a losing battle. I am so sorry. Good luck to you guys up there, but you're not going to win this. I'm sorry.
While Alberta plays with Team Canada, who wants Alberta's economy destroyed by decree, this is from Alberta51Project/AmericanFund.ca. We could be making a deal to save Alberta. America will not wait. Make a deal now. So the other thing I wanted to show you was, okay, there's this one. So if people don't think that, okay, actually, let me start with the fanatic here. I think this is an old clip, but this is where we're at with climate change in Canada. Oh, no. Is it not a video? What's happening?
I wonder if that's heavy crude. Is that heavy crude? Wasn't that the problem, is they didn't have heavy crude?
Well, I mean, yeah, that was the problem, but maybe they're finding solutions to that, right? I don't know. And what was the reason heavy crude made diesel or something like that?
Made diesel, yeah.
Yeah.
Good question for Marty, I suppose.
So this is one of our MPs, or it was. I don't know how old this is. I swear I saw this a few years ago, so I mean, it could be old, but this is what we're dealing with the climate change cult. The web of NGOs that are government-funded to make the studies for the government so that they can keep us wrapped in this climate change bullshit.
One of the comments, I want to start off by addressing one of the comments that was made by the witnesses around climate hysterics. Hysteria, it refers to something that is wildly emotional. It comes from the Greek word womb, of the womb. It is used in ancient Greek to refer to things associated with women. And I hope you'll forgive me if I get emotional. Climate emergencies are not gender neutral. The degradation of ecosystems disproportionately impacts women and girls. And I am wildly emotional. This is the existential crisis of our time. And to hear that asking for high ambition is climate hysteria, that makes me wildly emotional. Absolutely. you know, and I, when I think about my womb, you know, the two children that I bore from that womb and what future we are leaving them, I am wildly emotional. And it's not surprising to hear this from someone who has written articles that are pro-life. I think that we need to think about the intersection of gender and the climate crisis. And I...
You think we need to think about the intersection between gender and the climate crisis?
I didn't even know there was one.
What is happening?
Hope that the people around this table and the people listening will refrain from using language like climate hysteria. We are facing a climate emergency.
Oh my God, these people, Darren, we are in trouble. I mean, and she has to throw in the pro-life talking point, like, oh, so somebody's pro-life. Oh my God, boo-hoo. Warning, super cringe video of Victoria, BC MP Laurel Collins talking about climate change. Make sure you don't have any objects that can be thrown at the screen in easy reach. Yeah, I agree. So, yeah, I think she's retired. Anyways, I want to go back to if people don't think that this is going to happen. This is Thomas Massey. Where's that? Is this the thing that has the two? Why is this not showing me the highlighted version? Oh, there it is. Oh, isn't that interesting? I ended up attaching two of those same reports. So this is from CBC Watcher, but also from, I'm going to show you the other one, from Ann Roll too. And this is about this Judiciary Committee thing here. Canadians owe U.S. House Representatives Jim Jordan, Thomas Massey, and other members of the House Judiciary Committee a debt of gratitude for first exposing and the eventual dismantling of Mark Carney's GFANS, climate cartel. Carney, Michael Bloomberg, and friends coerced banks and large financial institutions into colluding with his net zero climate activist plan to withholding funding to Canadian and global resource projects. Carney is mentioned 7 times in their report. It would be nice for Canadians if they released his testimony/transcript of his interview before the House Committee on April 17th, 2024, just to see his testimony on the oil and gas industry and pipelines. I'm going to show you the highlighted parts here. And this is what Ann Roll wrote about this. Carney's GFANS is under U.S. judiciary review as of December 2024. Is this why he won't go to the U.S. or open diplomatic discussions? The unelected PM is part of a cartel, and this isn't hyperbolic. I mean, this is really not hyperbolic. We've been talking about this for years. We knew they were going to transition to this from COVID. It's infuriating. The unelected PM is part of a cartel who target U.S. companies with coordinated pressure campaigns demanding net zero. If the company doesn't comply, they collude to fire board members and replace them with climate cartel aligned members. So here's some highlights, right? This is from the report. Sustainability Shakedown: how a climate cartel of money managers colluded to take over the board of America's largest energy company. This is just from last winter. Another weird report from the U.S. that shows Canada in a very bad light. So this is the executive summary. From the big three asset managers to Blue State Public Pensions to the proxy advisor duopoly, collude to pressure American businesses to commit to net zero and scale down disfavored production. Through climate coalitions, including the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero, so that's the GFANS, the Net Zero Asset Managers Initiative series and Climate Action 100 plus investors from coordinated pressure campaigns to target U.S. companies and demand they disclose, reduce, and enforce net zero climate commitments. When companies refuse to surrender and comply, the climate cartel colludes to fire company board members and replace them with climate cartel aligned members. So just to get a view of... Where's my Grok? I had a Grok set up for this. Let me check my Grok history here. Oh shit. So much for that smooth transition. Let's see here. Where's my history of Grok?
History. There we go. Sorry about that. Here we go. Share this tab instead. So, and just so people are aware, right, of GFans, what do you think his position is in GFans, Darren?
President.
He's the co-founder and co-chair of the Glasgow.
Oh, yeah, I knew that. I knew that.
Financial Alliance for Net Zero. He established the initiative in April 2021 ahead of the GOP, the COP26 climate summit in Glasgow, in partnership with the UN Race to Zero campaign and the COP26 presidency. Carney, a former governor of the Bank of England and Bank of Canada, leveraged his extensive experience in finance and climate policy to bring together over 450 financial institutions from 45 countries, collectively managing assets worth $130 trillion. And this is our unelected prime minister, with the goal of aligning their lending and investment activities with net zero greenhouse gas emissions by 2050. He co-chairs this alongside Michael Bloomberg, with Mary Shapiro serving as vice chair. Carney has been a key figure in driving the alliance's mission to mobilize private capital for the global transition to a low carbon economy, emphasizing science-based targets and transparent reporting. Yeah, right. His leadership roles also extend to his positions as UN Special Envoy for Climate Action and Finance and Head of Transition Investing at Brookfield, which complement his work at GFans. I mean, get ready, Canada. I'm telling you, get ready. Buckle up. There's going to be a war over us and our resources between Carney and the global climate cult and the U.S. I'm telling you, it's coming.
Buckle up, baby. I like it. Well, that was a good one.
Thanks.
That's it for this week.
That's it.
All right. Well, we hope you enjoyed it. For the outlaw people of the show coming up this weekend. And yeah, check out our other pod. Sign up for Plus. If you guys head over to GrimAmericaOutlaw.ca today and sign up for Plus, you can get that going, get the extra content. And
here, let me pull it up. Let me pull it up here on the screen. Yeah, there's our outlawed. Yeah.
Yeah. Most people probably listen. But if you want to go sign up for Outlaw, GrimAmericaOutlaw.ca, you do get that extension to the interviews on that come out on the weekend. And we also do an extra show on Sundays or Mondays for that feed as well over at GrimAmericaOutlaw.ca. People can go check that out. You can check out our other podcast at GrimAmerica.ca. And contact at the cabin for trips and events, adultbrain.ca for audiobooks, print books, ebooks, publishing books, all that sort of fun stuff. And GrimAmericaCBD.com for tinctures and gummies, if that's what floats your boat. And GrimAmerica.ca/shrooms if you want to get into that. Other than that, sign up for Plus, guys. Head over there today, GrimAmericaOutlaw.ca. That's one of the best ways to keep us in business and keep the show going and help us keep growing is to head over to GrimAmericaOutlaw.ca. Sign up today. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next week.
Who's going to kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Pure bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, your idea of fun, is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrities post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.